Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Martin Gulston of Oncommune, a leading immune system expert that profiles autoantibodies to help biopharma companies develop and monitor breakthrough drugs and also precision medicine. So welcome, Martin.
Hey, Paul. Good to be back.
Yeah, well, big congrats on the recent £2.3 million fundraise, plus the conversion of a big chunk of the debt and some recent contract wins. But before we sort of like jump into those details, I don't suppose you could just quickly take the audience through exactly what the company does, the sort of key services that it offers biopharma.
Sure, thanks, Paul. Yeah, so basically we conduct autoantibody profiling through a magnetic bead-based technology called Luminex. What this does is it provides a window into the immune system, and we use it in clinical trials to either predict immune-mediated adverse events, confirm the mechanism of action of a drug, or help enrich the trial for patients that are more likely to respond on the drug. We also work in discovery, and we use the platform as an orthogonal biological validation of traditional high throughput genomics and proteomics screening approaches. And so we believe, the leading proponent of this activity in the market, and certainly with the Luminex technology as well. We're a strategic partner for Luminex. In fact, I'm going to be in Amsterdam with them tomorrow. So we're presenting some results from their latest machine, the IntelliFlex machine, that we were given free to trial. And so we're presenting, my CSO Petra's presenting the results of that work tomorrow in Amsterdam. So very excited about that.
Okay, good. And if I was a biopharma company, I was running, I don't know, a stage three trial on a new autoimmune disease drug, or alternatively, immunotherapy, medicine, etc. And I was just deciding, you know, to run that sort of stage three, and I was choosing some patients. How could exactly the, you know, Oncommune system help me do that in terms of ruling patients in and ruling patients out, and also meeting the regulatory requirements for, say, an immunotherapy, which I know are getting tighter?
Yeah, it's a good question. Unfortunately, the answer is very broad, because every project we work on is pretty much unique. But in general, some of the themes that are emerging that I think are actually commercial tailwinds for us are around that regulatory piece. So increasingly, companies are being asked by the regulator to demonstrate whether or not their drug actively modulates the immune system in certain ways. One way would be that we've experienced is that companies have been told to prove that their drug doesn't stimulate the immune system. And that's actually quite hard, proving a negative. But it does mean that the autoantibody profiling becomes a secondary objective of the clinical trial. So it becomes a secondary endpoint to the clinical trial. And we're seeing an increase in the incidence of that happening, driven by the regulator. So that's one area. Another area is confirmation of diagnosis. We did run a project with an autoimmune disease where we clearly showed that actually some patients have been entered into the trial were not actually correctly diagnosed, and those patients were non-responders in the trial. So this is a form of trial enrichment where the right patients are on the trial getting the right drug. It's a form of precision medicine driven by immunoinsights.
So that's a rule-in test, isn't it? Effectively, what you're saying is that you're looking at patients that should go onto the test.
Yeah, so I mean, in the ideal scenario, we get involved actually as early as phase 1-2. And what we're doing at phase 1-2 is testing the patient's immune response to the drug, pre-treatment, during treatment, post-treatment, and mapping that to the response of the patients in terms of their outcome on the therapy, but also what adverse events they experience, and in general, what other events they experience in the trial. And that is then used, those results are then used to map to the phase 3, to the bigger trial, to enrich for patients, as I've said, or be able to look out for serious adverse events that could happen or are common in that particular type of drug.
Yeah. So if I was a patient on that one, let's just say, for instance, and they thought that I may be a good person to go onto the trial, and then you took a blood sample of me, would you run that then through your autoantibody profiling to look at all of my autoantibodies to see whether I would have a severe side effect, or was it cytokine storm or some sort of really adverse reaction? Therefore, yes, I might be a patient they want to test, but frankly, I've got potentially some pretty serious side effects that they want to exclude as well.
It's possible. It's more likely with the cytokine storms. What happens is that's obviously due to a hyperstimulation of the immune system, and that actually indicates your drug is potentially working. So if you can predict that the patients are going to get a cytokine storm, you can medically manage them. So typically cytokine storms in IO happen on injection, first injection, which is manageable because the patient is actually in the hospital. But some patients, a smaller proportion, can have a cytokine storm episode later on in therapy when they're not necessarily under observation in the hospital. But that is also a sign the drug is working. So you do want to be able to predict and manage those patients. So perhaps they stay in your study, and obviously they hopefully have a better therapeutic response to the drug.
Okay, so effectively what we've got then, we've got tailwinds from a regulator, it's tightening, and they're requiring autoantibody profiling as a proof that the actual drug is working or you know, in terms of it impacting the immune system. Plus we've got tailwinds from doing the actual trials in terms of ruling in and ruling out relevant patients on the stratification, helping developer and stuff like that. Now, I also understand a couple of sort of RNSs you've done talk about one particular group of autoantibodies, which is IgE. Can you just talk about that, and in terms of the differentiation that the company seems to have here, so it can actually win a bigger share of the market than its competitors?
Yeah. So IgEs, or immunoglobulins, are a class of peptide in the blood that occur at different frequencies. So IgG is by far and away the most common. IgE is actually relatively uncommon. It occurs at 100,000 to a million times lower frequency in the blood than IgG, and it's typically masked by IgG. By being able to profile IgE-related autoantibodies, that potentially unlocks a whole new class of biomarker for the industry. And whilst it's been possible to type IgE in the blood, profiling the autoantibodies has proven very intractable because of that differential in frequency in the blood of the IgE. So what we've been able to do is develop a robust high throughput method to be able to separate out and profile IgE related autoantibodies in the blood. And we've done that with a large pharma partner, and we believe, and they believe, it's a really important component in the blood to measure. And certainly in relation to, historically it's related to allergic conditions, but it's also can be related to other autoimmune related conditions. So we believe that's an important breakthrough scientifically, and it's proving to be important for us commercially as well.
Okay, good. Okay, so effectively then, if we've got sort of antibody profiling, it seems to be becoming more and more important in that whole drug discovery, drug testing and drug monitoring process. How is that translating into the coalface with regards to new contracts and interest from biopharma as they move more towards precision medicine?
Yeah, well, I think biopharma is very firmly in precision medicine. I think they're moving towards it. I think precision medicine is almost, a regular fact of life, has been for a long time in oncology, but it's also spreading to other disease areas. Interestingly, we're seeing another trend we're seeing is pharma companies wanting to try their ADCs, their antibody drug conjugates that historically have been applied to cancer, into autoimmune disease because the mechanism of action is similar. And so we're seeing a trend towards that, where obviously we have great expertise in autoimmune. So that is another tailwind for us, that increasingly those companies that have got ADCs are wanting to try them out in autoimmune disease. So I think I've been in the company about a year and a half now, and from even from when I joined to now, I've seen an increasing interest in autoantibody profiling, driven in part by regulators, driven in part by critical mass, so more people interested in autoimmune disease or the impact on drugs in the immune system. So, for instance, even type 1 diabetes, there are four well-characterized autoantibodies now that typify type 1 diabetes or risk of it. And one of the areas we'd be interested in looking at with somebody is applying all of our 9,000 plus antigens to look for another, other novel autoantibody profiles or autoantibody markers for type 1 diabetes, because at the moment the four are kind of sewn up. Somebody's got those sewn up. So there's just been, I think, an explosion of interest in the space and an explosion of interest in our technology in particular. I think it's been driven as well by greater commercial focus, greater efforts on the marketing front to actually tell people about Oncommune. I mean, we've increased our followers on LinkedIn 2.5-fold since I've been here. We had less than 2,000 followers when I started. We're up to over 5,500 now. There's a lot more interest in the space, definitely.
Yeah, and I see you won quite a slew of sort of contracts just recently. Is the pipeline still pretty buoyant, I guess, at the moment?
Yeah, the pipeline continues to grow. So one of the things I did was build a new commercial team when I started around my head of BD, Mike, who's been with the company 7 years. And that team is now starting to really get motoring and bear fruit. And so what it means is our outreach, both on the East Coast, West Coast of the US and Europe, is greater. So we're having more conversations. We're at more conferences. I was at BIO-Europe last week in Stockholm with Mike, and we had over 30 meetings between us with potential customers, new customers mostly, at that meeting alone. So you multiply that up and you start to get this kind of momentum building of discussions, proposals, requests for proposals, but it takes time. So as I said, I've been in the company about 18 months. We started from a very low base, if I'm honest with you, but we really have, really, really started to gain momentum commercially in the business, it feels to me anyway. And we're starting to see the fruits of that. You saw, as you said, we've released a slew of RNSs around new contract wins, and the pipeline continues to grow behind that as well. So I'm hopeful that, in the future, I can continue to announce new contracts as we sign them, either in aggregate if they're smaller, but also if there are some larger ones in there too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you sort of doubled revenue the first one. You're going for a double in the second, more than a double in the second as well. So a double double will be a pretty good achievement. And just in terms of that, sort of like, I know Cavendish, the house broker, has got a figure for this year, FY 25. I think it's ending August, is it, or something like that? Mid year, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a bit of a weird end of August, which I did not pick.
Okay, another. I think
I have to live with it for now.
Yeah, I think they've got it's a revenue target of 6.9 million pounds. How much cover, how much sort of visibility do we currently have on that? It's given what you've won and what you can see.
Yeah, so with what we can see visibility-wise, we're over 40% so far, which is pleasing at the stage of year our FY 25 we're at. Obviously, I'd always like to see that more, but given we're a project fee for service focused business these days, that's actually pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. So yeah, so we're not relaxing by any means, and we're not resting our laurels here, but it's pleasing to see at this early stage of the financial year that we've made significant progress. Some of that was helped by some of the big contract wins we announced on the cusp of the end of last year. So when we say revenue, we mean recognized revenue. So that's revenue that we have processed through the business in the period, rather than order intake, so contracts won, or indeed cash in the business. So those are three very different things. But from a revenue perspective, we're looking at revenue that we've recognized, delivered as a business.
Yeah. And what sort of like revenue is do you get break even on the profitability? I read somewhere it was around about 6.5 million or something.
Yeah, so it's around there. It may be a bit less than that. We've taken steps as much as we can, obviously, to control our spend without harming the business, because the business is pretty lean, to be fair, now, as we've structured it. But yeah, I mean, we would be tracking to break even stroke profitability if we deliver the 6.9, definitely.
Good. And just can you talk through how that dovetails into the recent, I think it was, they say, the £2.3 million equity raise at 15p plus the €4 million debt conversion at 15p as well with IPF?
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, obviously, you can see it's been a very busy period for me.
I'm glad to hear it.
It's been very, very hectic. We were really pleased, actually, with particularly with the debt for equity swap that we managed to agree with IPF. That significantly changes the financial profile of the business from my perspective anyway. So with only €2 million of debt on the books, and we're paying that back on a kind of mortgage basis. So every month that goes by, a bit less is nibbled off it, which is helpful. That makes a massive difference in terms of giving us a bit more flexibility in terms of things we might do with the business or we might engage on in the future. So very pleased that the IPF cooperated on that with us, and thankful that they did. And then that was kind of in lockstep with the fundraise. We raised, I think, 2.3. We were shooting for 2.5. But 2.3 is sufficient if we cut our cloth accordingly. And what we're hoping is that that takes us through to positive cash flow territory with the deals we've signed and with the portfolio, the backlog and the pipeline that we're developing. Certainly. Yeah.
And I'm guessing IPF now are probably your largest shareholder, aren't they? They've got sort of 20% of the equity. So they're really on board in terms of the strategic direction.
Yeah, it certainly changes their focus and changes their view on life, definitely. And what was also good to note about the fundraise was that it was done at a premium to the share price at the raise point, which these days is a rarity. Most of the previous fundraises in our space of businesses of our scale or name that I'm aware of were done at 30, even 50% discount, which leads to a significant dilution. So by managing to complete the raise, albeit not quite as much as we wanted, but to complete the raise at a premium, obviously reduces dilution for shareholders and also reduces the amount or proportion of the business that IPF ended up with. So they are below 20%, but obviously they are an aligned shareholder, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly demonstrated they've backed the management team there to deliver, because, as I say, they've moved into equity owners rather than actually just debt owners. Okay, great.
Yeah, so it's a big step for them. And as you say, I think it is a big tick in the box in terms of their belief in us, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, good. And then just in terms of news flow, I think the prelims are probably coming out sometime. Is it December or January or something like that for August FY24?
Yeah, so we're working hard on that at the moment as we speak. We're working hard on our audit and our annual report. Historically, Oncommune has been very late in delivering its prelims and its financial results. Last year was no exception, but that was in part driven by the complexity of the disposal in the accounts, which happened in the May. This year, we're a much cleaner, simpler business, so I'm hopeful that we can get results or prelims out sooner than previous years. So yeah, so certainly aiming for end of year, January, early January if we can.
Fantastic. And I know when we chatted last time, you were telling me that you're waiting for some London buses, and then you announced a shed load of them. I'm going to ask you again. I'm at the bus stop. Any buses are in the horizon at all?
There's always buses on the horizon. There is a timetable. We're trying to follow it. So, yeah.
Okay, I'll, I'll look forward to watching it come through then. So thanks again, Martin, and very best of luck in terms of contracts going forward. So thanks again.
Thank you, Paul, and thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at minkycouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.